Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm flipping the angle today because I watched some old videos and it looks kind of cool from this angle. Plus, you can see my lovely hose right here. Tonight, I'm going to cover something that is something I run into a lot. And it's sort of ironic and funny that I run into it a lot because it's about formal education. At this point, that's what I'm going to call the episode. I might think of like a couple other words to kind of make sure people understand what I'm talking about. But again, isn't every episode sort of a little treasure hunt? The premise of this episode is the following. Or the theme, or the guideline. In my life, I run into tons of people who lack formal education, which in the United States of America is defined as you have at least a bachelor's degree. And they talk to me as if I have one. And they're sort of either directly apologizing for not having one, and not in terms of an employer situation, but just even a close friend of mine recently was talking to me, and it just kept going on and on and on about how I didn't have a formal education. I just kept saying, well, you know, I don't have one. And he just kept going on. Well, I don't have one, you know. In his mind, he has built up this degree as something that he needs, kind of. Something he needs to apologize for, like he's a lesser human being. Now, who is this individual? Well, he's nearly my age. He's an extremely successful person at what he does. And he has never needed it. But now he is getting a little older, and what he does involves a lot of physical effort. And so I'm sure he's feeling the aches and pains, and you know, you blow out joints every once in a while. Got a couple of friends in this kind of work, a lot of outside construction work. It starts to get scary in the United States of America, at least. I'm sure this is the case in many places around the world. Because this is the land of opportunity, not the land of socialism. And so we're, you know, 40 years ago, this was coming to an end. 50, 60, 70 years ago, you could get a job anywhere in the world, or anywhere, excuse me, in the 50 states of America, once we acquired the last two. And you could work at the post office your whole life. You could build cars your whole life. You could do anything your whole life. And then you had a pension. And you run off and retire. And you retire way sooner than you would retire today, which, you know, you'll hear me vacillate my opinion. It doesn't really vacillate that much, but, you know, retirement for me should be something you only do if you've got something equally, thought-provoking to do after you retire. Unless, of course, you're being forced out for physical reasons, like I've said there. But if you don't use your mind, you lose your mind. In the Midwest, because I came from a small town, like I always say, we get to see things that people don't get to see as clearly in the big city. Because we see it in the case of everyone's grandmother or everyone's grandfather went through this particular phase. The number one cause of death for men in my hometown was heart disease, you know, working really hard their whole lives and just basically physically expiring. But it usually had to do with bad eating habits and congenital issues of how their body metabolizes all this horrible food. Now, the ladies, for whatever reason, seldom died of any physical problem where it was, like their heart stopped pumping or, you know, some sort of like trivial thing. But after they got to this brilliant stage of banning, or not banning, but suggesting that everyone throw away all things that are healthy and start eating everything that was unhealthy. Don't eat butter, eat margarine, don't eat the yolks of an egg, eat the whites, you know, all this stuff. Within 5 years, the mental aptitude of people started to deteriorate. Not eating the yolk of an egg and then using aluminum appliances in your house was two huge coups on the American people. One, we stopped eating the cholesterol, of which the gray matter in our brain is comprised of greatly, which means we got with something called neural tangling, which started to kick off dementia, started to kick off Alzheimer's. And then by using aluminum appliances and getting little tiny molecules of this stuff in your body, it accumulates in the brain, and then you get Alzheimer's. Every Alzheimer's brain, when opened up and studied, has an aluminum accumulation problem. But formal education is very interesting because I lucked out. You know, I either came from a family line that really loves information, education, or, you know, there's probably a genetic trait there. But there was also just not having any brothers or sisters and having parents that were very into themselves and essentially said, go entertain yourself. And I'm very happy about this, right? It's like I'm complaining, but they had their individual lives and they basically said, you need to have your individual life. Very powerful. I remember like it was yesterday, being 7 or 8 years old. I believe I was 7. We just moved out into the country in a very nice house. And I walked up to my mom and she was making me a sandwich or something, or making herself something. I can't remember, but I was standing next to the toaster, which is next to the refrigerator. And I said, Mom, I'm bored. And she just looked at me and said, well, you got to go find something to do. And I remember saying, well, what do you mean? She says, well, yeah, well, those toys, go play with them. And I said, and then she said to me, when I was a kid, I used to play post office and I would get letters and I'd write letters and put them in envelopes and then run around and deliver them around the house or whatever. Now, she was an only child until she was 9. And then, of course, having babies in the house, you can't exactly play with them. So she had to wait another 5 years. She was well into her teens before she had a companion to play. So she really spent her life in the same vein. My father, his brother was 12 years older than him, still is. And, you know, he had his pastimes. So, you know, I ended up playing with my toys. Luckily, Legos was invented. And so I'd create all these worlds. I didn't get the full coup de grace. I mean, this is good too, because I lived out in the country. And so I spent a lot of my time outside hanging out with my friends. I had a girl live to the right and a dude that lived 2 houses down. Didn't know anybody else. In fact, my grandmother used to live in the house the guy moved into. And then she moved back in town and my buddy's family moved in there. So first I was hanging out with the girl. We learned about a bunch of stuff about the human body we shouldn't have at that age, but whatever. And then my buddy was real interesting because he was sort of like he was a weird kid. He had several sisters. He had about 3 sisters. And he had a father that was very passive, very like Sonny Bono kind of dad. And my father was former military. And so he didn't mess around. And I remember one time, it's just a little digression to show you what I learned, okay? This all has to do with the foundation of things that you have in your life that actually helped you succeed or will help you succeed prior to a formal education. Because I really want to take the stigma out of you don't have a formal education. Today, getting a formal education is sort of like me telling you, all right, you see this pond and we're off in Africa somewhere or South America somewhere. There's a bunch of piranha in there and I want you to swim across. It's probably about 100 yards. I want you to swim across and, hopefully make it, man. Because that's how bad formal education is now. But there is a filter to formal education, which we're going to get to, which will almost guarantee a successful career. But one day we're hanging out in my bedroom, we're chilling out. And my father, for whatever reason, didn't trust this kid because he was sort of slimy. And he isn't slimy today, but he just put off a weird vibe, let's put it that way. And my father had a lot of valuables in the house. And so he was out working on a car and we're inside. It's a beautiful day in Kansas. And he's like, he comes in, he goes, I want you guys to come outside. Come on, go outside. And I remember going, all right, you know, no problem with me. I got a motorcycle, whatever, we can do something. I was about 8 years old. And my friend wasn't going to move. He was sitting on the bed, had a captain's bed. Well, if you guys remember that thing, a little secret hideout underneath it, right? And he's just sitting there. And my dad's smart enough to know, well, I can't really touch anyone else's kid, but it is the 70s, so, you know, most parents kind of get along with, you know, various amounts of discipline in the neighborhood, but he's not moving. And my dad's this big dude. And so he raised his voice finally, and he just let this kid know, look, if you don't get the fuck off that bed, I'm going to fucking get you the fuck off that bed, and so you better go. And he finally responded, went outside, and I remember my friend was kind of shocked, but he was kind of shocked in that sort of mellow kind of way, man. He was like, man, your dad's really fucking intense, man, you know, something to that effect. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we got to go outside. What the hell's wrong with following the fucking rules, dude? It's not like he's asking us to, you know, kill the cat or something. But 1 year later, as I've said several times on the show, my parents moved to a city about 100 miles away. And then they got divorced. And in spite of the fact that money was extremely tight, and money played a huge factor in my parents divorcing, I don't even remember the event. Like, my parents bought a world encyclopedia. And they may have bought it for themselves, but it ended up in my mom's apartment. And she had this really cool bookshelf at one point. And I remember looking at it, and it was A through Z, so it was super easy for me to understand. And I remember just pulling a book out and opening it up. And it had all these diagrams and all this information. It's basically WikiLeaks today, right? You just go to Britannica. It's on below all my fucking moon hoax videos. By the way, they put a goddamn disclaimer underneath my reptilian alien episode. So just go to the channel and select, you know, type in search on my channel and search on reptilian and look at it. They put a little disclaimer underneath my video. Oh, geez, the deep state worried about something? Why the fuck do you have to clarify that with your, you know, anti or your total propaganda thing? So I start farming through that thing. And as you know, I'm not going to go through all the stories again, but I learned the two main subjects I remember reading, and I've read tons of that thing, was sort of nuclear physics, the basis of, you know, subatomic physics, and it got me started in sort of the generic, what's fission, what's relativity, what's special relativity, all these things. I don't think I bumped into black holes until a few years later. And of course, I had this genius uncle, and he took me into quantum mechanics the second he heard that I was going into the Einstein realm, because he goes, you got to learn how it really works now. But I didn't have anyone there telling me that I was too young to read things. And what was interesting was that my ability to read scientific books was nearly fluent at a young age. And I'm not sure how, because, I mean, my education was nothing special. I didn't have parents that read me stories at night, if you have any questions there. One thing my parents did that was super damn cool when I was a kid, when I was about, I'd probably say 2.5 to maybe 5 or 6, they, one, put the alphabet on the ceiling, you know, in a big line, so it was going through that whole thing. And then they put all the instruments on the wall, these pictures of instruments. And my dad would be like, what's this? French horn, what's that too? What's this? And so that was interesting. So that sort of memory game and building my memory worked out. And oddly enough, when I did this with my daughter, I didn't do the instruments because I couldn't find those, but I did the planets across her her bedroom, did all the stars in the ceiling, so it was really cool. And she learned those in 2 seconds. It was great. She knew them, and it would have conversations with adults that didn't know the 9 planets, right? But I taught her the alphabet, and she learned the alphabet probably about 4 or 5, easy, A through Z, boom, 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 sang the song. And then she forgot them. It was weird. Like 2 years later, she couldn't get like halfway through it. And then she finally souped up and became a little genius of her own. So education was in my life. By the time I told you I flunked 7th grade. And so that was very, you know, it's like an ego check for you. You're kind of like, oh, Jesus, am I an idiot? Christ. I mean, 1 F's one thing, but 5 F's is a whole different game. But when I did come back to the Midwest, because I then bolted to Massachusetts, that's where I failed. I came back to my hometown, which was cool. So now I'm not in that other town. I had a lot of fun at Derby, Kansas, let me tell you. That's where I discovered arcades and stealing. Yes, I was a huge little deviant kid in the olden days. Nothing like the bangers today. But by the time I got back, got into 8th grade, retook an English class, I started acing again, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm smart, you know? And I was told that a lot of teachers, you know, when I came back, my father was like, man, this chick's known for being really, really hard. I think one of the women who taught junior high taught my father. And he was like, you know, she was rough, so you be good and you pay attention. Sure enough, paid attention. She ended up loving me. It was great. But I had a little anomaly happen. I had two anomalies, actually. One, my uncle brought home the 99 Texas Instruments 99-4A, and that's when I did my first artwork in binary and then started coding. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like a frequency. I start noticing computers everywhere. My father's company had a lot of computers. The colleges had computers. But I had, you know, I went out to Massachusetts, got out of the 413 school district education from my hometown. And then I went over to this other, you know, town, did 3 grades and went to Massachusetts, did 2 grades, 2 different schools there. And then when I came back, I was out of the system. And so I started taking classes and I realized that other kids were in more advanced classes, especially mathematics. They were doing pre-algebra, which I never took. Then they were already in algebra. And by the time I got to my sophomore year, my father started teaching me algebra in 3rd grade at home. And I was just a whiz kid with that shit. You know, I hated it, but it was fun, you know, solving for both sides of the equal sign, blah, blah, blah. And of course you get into the utter bore fest called simplification. I'm just going to tell you, algebra is purely to make you think. You'll never use it in your lifetime, I swear to Christ. Programming video games and trajectories and all kinds of wild, you know, 3D transitional matrices for various, and you never touch algebra. It is like the biggest fucking waste of time ever. Now, geometry and trigonometry, ooh, you'll use the shit out of that stuff. And that's a lot of fun. Physics, absolutely. Calculus, yes. Statistics, yes. Probability, yes. Fun stuff. When it attaches to real life, it just clicks in your brain, right? So I realized kids were going ahead of me. But then I was doing a bunch of shit at home that kids couldn't even conceive of. Programming real products, man. I would design a product, write out the features. You know, in one case, I had 32K, and one of the computers had 64K. And these are full-blown products. If I had a father who was an entrepreneur, he would have looked at these products and went, Jesus, let's put a little ad in the back of a magazine, sell it, and we'll just sell the shit out of discs. I mean, I made all kinds of stuff. I've mentioned it several times. I won't bore you again. But I got into high school, and, you know, there's a point where they kind of let you pick your classes, but then there's over some fucking counselor overlord that tells you what you can and can't take because you have prerequisites you have to take, right? And they had lined up stuff that didn't matter. They had lined up, you can't take geometry until you take algebra 1. You can't take trig until you take algebra 2. And I was like, bullshit. Those things have nothing to do with each other. I can take them both at the same time. So starting off in my sophomore year, in fact, they just literally told me to my face, you can't do that. You can't get into both those classes. All right. So I did it anyway, and I took 2 math classes, trying to haul ass to my senior year. But because I was behind, even doubling up and taking 6 math courses, plus physics and programming and all this other shit on the side, astronomy, sound waves, I still couldn't get calculus and statistics and probability before high school was over. I had to teach that to myself through life's necessity to have those calculations done, right? But what I did was the following. When I was at home in the 80s, I remember, it's going to sound funny, when the album Shaka Khan came out, the one that's really famous in the 80s, that was the exact time frame where I was at home especially in the wintertime, man, there's nothing you can do outside in Kansas. And I was programming my ass off. I got the command sheet to my little Coco 2 TRS-80 computer, devoured the thing, man. I was like, I wrote a program that used every single command to the best of my ability. Same thing with the Apple IIs. By the time I got to the IBM PC, like I said, in the Pascal world, it was just kind of learning how the outer structure language of Pascal worked, and everything else was just the same old algorithms. And so at a really young age, I learned, holy shit, there are patterns to programming. If you learn the pattern on one computer, you can port it to another computer. Now, fortunately, I got in a little bit before object-oriented programming became a thing. Smalltalk had come out in the early 80s, and I didn't get a chance to touch it until it became pretty much Objective-C. Now, why go through 25 minutes of all that? Because I got to move to California at 18 years old, technically 17, 2 weeks later, I became 18. And within 2 months, I got a job at a software company. First, it was tech support. But right away, people were like, okay, this kid can code and he can draw. So let's have him draw the fonts, the icons, and let's teach him our custom assembly language that was invented to program all those tax forms in TurboTax. At the time, we only had federal. I think we just crossed over maybe the state line within the next year. But we were inventing the Windows version from scratch. And so again, if you ever ran that product back in the day, it was called TaxView back in the day. Every single font was mine. Every single printer font on both products was mine. And it was a weird thing because I'm sitting there, a really young kid, pimples all over my face. And I remember going to lunch after I got promoted into engineering officially because I was doing this thing called encoding is what they called it. And people didn't really pay much attention to me. And then finally they assigned the Apple IIgs platform to me, which we only released on because we thought the computer was going to do real well. And I was porting the code over from the Mac. But I'm like 19 years old, I think, at the time. And I remember going out to lunch fairly quickly with the engineering team. And someone asked me if my high school ring was my college ring. And I was like, no, I haven't gone to college yet. Oh, okay. I didn't really say much else. There's no accolades or anything waiting for me at the end of that conversation. But it started dawning on me that people thought I had gone to college. And then that ring comment happened several times. Where'd you go to school? Where'd you go to school? Every time I mentioned what I did, where'd you go to school? And they're not asking me what high school. They're asking me what college. Later in life, about 1992, I had moved to the Bay Area, and I had a pretty steady job. And I had access to De Anza College. Now, technically speaking, I went one semester in Ventura Community College, but due to a funding miscalculation from my parent, who was helping me do that, we didn't have the money to get through the whole semester. So I ended up having to bail out, unfortunately. But I think I trudged through the De Anza College for about 2 years, maybe 2.5, before it was all over. And I was really trying to get my credentials in... try to get credits in the programming realm, which I did. Didn't take it anywhere. Then I ended up just having fun, taking German and sociology, all my kind of AA stuff. So I took psychology, sociology, and then astronomy, right? But then that was it. My what four-year degree people call sub-formal education at junior colleges was absolutely over. I can't say a lot of what I learned in those computer courses changed my life. I did learn some old algorithms which weren't used anymore. But meanwhile, I'm writing the core product that pays everybody's bills at the company I was working for. So why are people so hung up on formal education? Are they stuck in sort of a class structure in their mind? Do they see something... when they have conversations with other people, do they feel like they're not as intelligent as other people? Perhaps their language isn't as developed. I don't know what makes it happen. So let's take a break from that. And let's run over to folks that get formal educations. I have no idea when the college educations turn to crap. And how do I define that? I define that as a bunch of degrees were invented that have absolutely no trade skills applied to them or that match up to them. That's a bummer, man. Imagine getting a full degree and you can't get a job because what you got a degree in is jobless. You didn't become an attorney, a chemist, a doctor, and you're not going to become a professor in what you got your degree in. That's another way to escape real life, right? Well, your filter from this point forward for your kids, your grandkids, your friends' kids, and maybe if you're still a kid, your filter is this. If you can't find a trade skill that is attached to the degree that you're going to get, and if you don't look at the demand for that trade skill before you engage in the degree, then you might be setting yourself up for a big debt book with the, you know, student loan program, which means you're going to enter the world with two giant obstacles in front of you. One, you're not going to be able to earn much money. Two, you're going to have this gigantic debt on your back. So you're going to be trying to pay for your necessities of life, and you're going to have this blood-sucking, you know, loan going. Now, luckily, some of these student loans have teeny tiny payments. I mean, I had a girlfriend once that I think had a $50 payment on hers. Not, you know, it's interest-free, but still, it's a horrible thing to walk around with, you know, even $15,000 worth of debt. If you had a college degree in the 90s, sometimes you had to take three of those out. So you're sitting there walking around with $45,000 in debt and you don't have a job yet. Now, there are some degrees, those trade skill degrees especially, where a formal education is sort of the only way you can efficiently get the information you need to perform the duties of the job. Obviously, if you were going to be a scientist of any kind, well, think about it. Could you teach yourself all that science? I mean, the, you know, every bit of it? Well, you could, potentially. But who's going to know? Are you going to know? Do you have a course you buy from someplace and then you follow all the rules? Well, then you're kind of getting a formal education. If you try to do it by yourself and you miss something, well, Christ, if you're a chemist, you might mix two things together to blow up and kill you or just aspirate and choke you out, right? You certainly can't perform any type of medicine or even mental medicine, psychiatry, psychology, without having formal degrees that give you the formal certification to open your business. Well, that's actually good news, right? Because if you're interested in those things, you go get those degrees. That debt doesn't matter because you're going to be cranking out major paychecks, okay? Yeah, you have malpractice insurance you're going to have to get, and that's a scammy fucking game. And because everyone knows how to gank the system, you might have some bad patients that are just there to fall down and sue you, right? But isn't it interesting that in the United States of America, technically speaking, you're supposed to get a certification before you can call yourself an interior designer? Some of you may not know that. You do. Isn't that amazing? But you don't have to have a certification to call yourself a computer engineer. Which part's going to do more damage potentially? Someone programs some ATM to hand out money? You do some bank algorithm that robs everybody blind? We had a program when I told you I was in pharma, and when I went over to clinical studies, we had a separate group that was handling manufacturing, the real manufacturing. And someone, actually there was a bug in the product where if you change the value of a variable, the product is supposed to update the variable's value. You know, it's supposed to redraw it if you update it in memory. Well, there was a version that had a bug, and it wasn't doing it. Now, you could always explicitly say redraw. And I always did that just because I never trusted the system in the first place, way before the bug ever existed. But they had a manufacturing app where someone was sitting on the manufacturing floor and they were ordering supplies. You know, 10,000 pounds of an active ingredient or an inert ingredient to make a pill out of. And the thing wasn't redrawing, but every single time they pushed the order button, the order was getting placed. And they ended up having like, you know, 60,000 units of this stuff showing up when all they wanted was six. Because the person was like, it's not working, right? Well, it wouldn't necessarily be a certification that would stop that error from occurring. But geez, when the liability comes around as to what are we going to do with all this crap, it might help the process if you did have some certification. But then certifications just turn into little mafias, don't they? And let me give you a little digression into that so you'll understand. In the state of California, not in my home state, you cannot get a pair of glasses replaced. If I broke these glasses, I couldn't get the lenses replaced unless I had had an eye check in the last 2 years. I think they want to make it 1 year. So I got to pay for the whole process of checking out my eyes. Now I'm over 40, so I need to do that probably every year, let alone every 2 years. But my uncle, who was a master optometrist, this dude, you know, the little thing he puts up to his eye and it shoots a little beam of light into your eye. He could just walk up to you and do this and he would know your prescription in 2 seconds. He says, I was one of the best in my class doing this. And it's just insane. He takes that, you know, the thing it puts up to your face with all the lenses and he just dial it right in and then it would be perfect. And if he turned it any other way, it looked like shit. So that's how good he was. And he said, look, pretty much from the age of 20 to about 35, he goes, your eyes are going to be exactly the same. But about 35, your eyes are going to start taking a shit real slowly, but it keeps ramping up, right? It's a huge bummer. Now, again, we're not genetically engineered to read writing on a piece of paper. I hate to break that to anybody. But what they did in California, in order to give all the optometrists this huge financial bump, is to insert by via the optometry association or whatever, this mandate that you have to have an eye exam. Even if you have perfect 20/20 vision, you're constantly checking your eye vision, constantly giving that $80 or $150 over for no goddamn reason at all, right? And you should know, this is a little piece of information. Sorry for anyone who's an optical dispenser or an optometrist who makes money from selling lenses, which really isn't the case anymore, except for small towns. If you paid $300 for a frame, that dude's paying $100. It's a 2x markup, and that's the way it's always been. Lens Crafters is probably a 400% to 500% markup. Lenses, they cost $35 for a pair of lenses back in 1995, probably up to 2000. I was buying them at cost from my uncle, probably up to about 2005. Still was $35. So let's just add $15. It's $50 for a pair of lenses. Well, what do they want to charge you? $250, $300 just for the lenses and all the scratch-proof stuff, which doesn't fucking work anymore. Total mafia. So there's that kind of stuff, too, that'll insert itself into your career. Now, if you're in that career, you'll love it. If you're a dentist, prescribe fluoride. It'll blow up everybody's teeth, and you'll stay in business. It's interesting. The formal education. Well, a lot of us don't want to be attorneys because we want to go to heaven. A lot of us don't want to be doctors because we don't want to lose 10 years of our life in an educational institution and then another 10 years in some residency. And so we want to get life going a lot faster. That was my problem personally. I wanted to live life. But I wanted to do all kinds of stuff that normally you would need a formal education. First music studio I went to in my life in California, the dude had his master's degree in music. He had theory and a bunch of other stuff. And I learned a little bit from this guy, but not much. I wasn't there to learn anything from him. But I was just a natural at writing music. And he would walk in and get just deathly jealous of what I was creating. And I hate saying that because it's an easy thing to cop, to kind of give yourself a little passive accolade. But here's what this guy would do. I would be live just playing my one of my songs or layering one of them up, and he'd walk up to the mixing board, which was way away from where I was sitting, and he'd start putting on echo effects and all this kind of shit, fucking up all my cadence, right? And playing this ballad, and he's making it chirp all over the, you know, one note's playing 8 times and descending into the distance. He needed to sabotage. Well, I'd already dealt with that as a child because I had a parent that was doing that to me as well. So I was just kind of, I was cool with it. I was like, man, what an asshole. And it's his place. I can't fucking complain, right? But everything I wanted to do, I had to teach myself. And here's the weird thing. Here's the interesting thing that got me going. And you probably have one of these as well. I was an artist at a really young age, like I've said. So I learned as a really young person, well, I can learn how to do artwork. And as much as my teacher would say, this is how you do perspective, these are 4 or 5 different ways you can shade, he really couldn't teach me how to draw. Right? He couldn't insert himself in my body and say, I'm going to show you how to draw this. And then you feel that? You feel those motor mechanics? Okay, now I'm going to pop out of your soul and you can have control again of your body or whatever. And now you know how to draw. That doesn't work like that. You have to practice your ass off. So when I got into computers, same thing. Back in the old day, and I really regret kids trying to learn today because it's just so fucking convoluted. Every programming language out there is so goddamn convoluted, it's ridiculous, especially the ones that run on our desktops, whether it be Windows or Mac. I mean, they have got commands to, they got GUIs and all this other stuff that's supposed to help you, but man, if they just made a good language, which is like so fucking easy, we've had them in the past, you could learn how to code in minutes. Minutes. Again, back in the day, you bought a computer and the damn thing just had a blinking cursor when you started it. You had to feed the operating system disks in. You had to then load your program and then run. It was a big, long process, right? And obviously, more people probably ran software than wrote software at some point. So we learned you could do it yourself. And then when I lived in a small town, like I've said several times, we did everything at our own house, right? Every guy owned a plumber's wrench, right? Everybody knew everyone mowed their own lawn. You know, you knew all the processes. You fixed your own car. You changed your own oil. You did all that stuff by yourself. And so everything was, you need to learn how to do these things. You're a woman. You're going to have all the women things, and they're things that women love to do, and all the guy things. And the women rely on the dudes to fix the car and keep it running, and the dude relies on the girl to know how to maybe make a meal or keep the house going, raise the kids. It was just a nice thing. Now it's all evil now, right? What a bunch of bullshit that is. As long as there's mutual respect between the two partners, it's a beautiful life, let me tell you. You can't handle everything by yourself and have a life left over, right? Any of you are single parents, you know what it's like. I was a single parent. Holy hell. It was like do absolutely everything constantly. So you know that there are trade skills where you have to learn things. If you're going to learn how to fix cars, well, you could come in with a lot of knowledge, just like me with programming. And you could just be like keeping up to date on everything. But what if you wanted to change from American brand car to an exotic brand car? You want to go into Mercedes or Ferraris? Well, you might have a guy who's going to mentor you like a blacksmith. That's usually the way it happens. But sometimes, again, you want to live a little bit more life than is normally possible by going into these institutions and burning decades inside these institutions. So you get home, you get your books, you get whatever you want online. Today, it's so awesome. My God, it's awesome. You want to learn how to do something, you just look up the problem and you solve it, just like Vanilla Ice, baby. I had one of my episodes, I had the mic on too hot. And I got home and I started listening to it as a recording. I was like, oh my God, I got the mic up too hot. I'm burning out my voice horribly. So I have Adobe Audition. I looked up Adobe Audition clipping, how to clip, how to get rid of distortion. This dude, in 3 minutes, broke it down beautifully. I fixed the track and it's going to sound just fine. You won't know which one it is. Like I said, anything that you want to learn how to do, you put it in Google, put it in YouTube, boom, there's like 100 videos teaching you how to do that thing. So that's pretty alluring, right? So let's look at your age, because your age is everything. Unfortunately, my show is too mature for kids, but if you have access to kids, you might steal this information from all my episodes about how to get a job, being an artist, anything creative. Just go into the creative playlist and get yourself updated on some of that stuff. Sometimes I forget to click the creative category, and it's in self-improvement. Your kids need to start playing in things the second that they gain consciousness. Again, my trick that I found was that if I told my daughter, I bought you a bunch of art supplies, have fun, she would resist. Just one of those kind of kids. And so, but if I just left it around the house, well, she might wander into it and get it going herself. But by the age of 18, your kid needs to have played in probably everything that is technically possible for them to engage in the next 4 years, right? During their formal education. When I was a kid, it was expected that you would do your 2 years of junior college, then declare a major and go into a four-year and get your major. Well, today, they want you to declare your major from the second you walk into college at 18 years old. Can you imagine the kids today trying to figure that out? What they end up doing is picking something that they don't really love, and then they get the degree, and maybe they get a job in it, and they don't like it, and then they're forced to become a teacher or change their degree or change what they love. Go back and get an undergrad degree a graduate degree and change their life. But that's two more years and that's another loan and that's another delay to starting your life. And so they tend to demonize everything that's life and love everything that is what they have available. It's just natural, right? Now, again, this is really a passage about folks that want to do careers. Some people just want to start families, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's a beautiful thing. We need great people in this world. But it should be almost an emergency broadcast in this country of America. I can't speak for any other country, but in America, it should just literally go out as a red hot notice to everyone's cell phone. Get your kids involved in things that can turn into trade skills, right? And I'm really sorry to tell you that playing soccer probably ain't one of those things. Being in a band, you know, like band in school, may not be one of those things. It may be a great place to have some fun and blow some steam off, but think about how those events rip families to pieces. I have watched in Southern California since I've been down here, families running around trying to keep up with all the games that these kids play, these sports titles, and the families literally ripped apart. There's all these arguments happening. It costs a tremendous amount of money to get the kids all this shit to play these games, and there's no future in it. You know, maybe though, if your kid shows really intense aptitude and they love it, you're not forcing them into it because you think they need to learn team sports or whatever, they could get a scholarship. And that could be a very powerful thing for the family to save $100,000, right? So if your kid's really good at something like that, then that may be the strategy. But then there has to be a second strategy, right? So your kid's going to get, I can tell you right now, I've got plenty of friends who've got scholarships due to soccer, which is fine. If it pays the bills, then that's good. But their degrees are these frivolous, weird degrees that don't turn out to be anything employable. But now, let's take a break from that line of thinking. Let's go back to my buddy. So you're totally successful at what you do, but you feel inferior to some infinitesimal degree that it makes you loop in a conversation saying, well, you know, I didn't get my degree. Well, you could have a degree. You could have a degree in something that's either expired or you're not interested in it, or it doesn't match up to a trade skill. All right. When I was going through schooling in the 1990s, I actually almost moved back to the Midwest to go through a formal education. And he's my second cousin, but I call him my uncle because he's my dad's age. He has his PhD. He ran Merck Pharmaceutical for 20 plus years. Utter genius. And I was at his place just coincidentally having dinner with the guy and his kids. And I hadn't seen his kids since I was, you know, much younger back in the Midwest. They all moved to the Bay Area. It's just crazy. And he sat there and smiled, and he's just the nicest guy on planet Earth. And he said, why? Well, you know, tell me about this moving back to Texas. I'm going to move to Texas where my dad lived and go to school. I said, well, you know, I just think it'd be good to get a formal education, get all this on paper, and then I could get, you know, the lame employers to employ me, which is what we're going to get to in a second here. And he says, why would you want to do that? And I said, what do you mean? I've never had anyone in the world talk me out of a degree, let alone a guy with a PhD, let alone a guy who I'm sitting in his one of many houses he has. You know, he was just a genius. This guy invented all kinds of wild stuff, and he was writing protocols for Bausch & Lomb just as his little side gig. He was just retired pretty much. I said, well, look at the spoils you have because of your degree. And he goes, I spent 10 years in school because I didn't live any of my 20s. And when I came out, I went straight into corporate America, pharma. I was good at it, but I lost my life in that. So but now I wake up and I'm 50 years old and I'm retired out of that. And I run around trying to chase jobs all over the world. He went to Japan for a little while and created a tape that used cocaine, some element of cocaine to move your teeth. In about a month and a half to 3 months, you could get rid of 3 years worth of braces. You just take the tape off and everything hardens back up and you're great. And then the company president dies and the son doesn't have any interest in the tape. And so he throws the whole fucking thing away. I mean, what a fucking idiot. So it ends up that night, he changes my mind. The move is off. And I mean, I had told everyone I was moving. My family, my close friends, I called it off because of that one conversation. Because he goes, you already do what you love to do. Why would you change your thing? Why would you prove it to anyone else, right? And here's the interesting thing. People with degrees stick together. The people without degrees stick together. But now, we can name plenty of people without degrees that are pushing shopping carts and living outside restaurant dumpsters, right? We're not talking about those folks. We're talking about guys like Steve Jobs. For those of you like Windows, maybe Bill Gates. I'm not a huge Bill Gates fan, but he managed to succeed without a degree. And there's a ton of them. a ton of people that you admire that have no formal education. Now, I don't mean to create a beacon for you outside of formal education. If you know there's a degree out there with your name on it, there's a profession you want to do, you want to get into electronics or robotics or something, and again, there's a mathematical formula. But let me finish up this point and we'll get back to that. Would you really want to work for a company that is so ill-informed, meaning people that are so ill-informed, they can't look at your experience and your knowledge and figure out that you're the perfect person for the job? Would you really want to work for a person like that? I mean, you're coming in and they're a big doubting Tom. I'm going to tell you, you don't want to work for those people because in a way they're kind of idiots. Why work for fucking idiots? How far up can you go in a company where they believe in a philosophy that makes no goddamn sense? Again, if it's a really intense work or a really intense trade, that you have to have a degree in, of course you have to have the degree in it. Again, this will fold into our next point. If you wanted to get a bunch of information super duper quick, so you can live life to the max, you want to be a baller in your own definition of being a baller. Well, if you have a good school and you have a good track that you're on, you have a trade skill that you want to go for, and you're going to have to, you can essentially sit around and try to teach yourself something, but you might have a couple different blind spots where you don't know. And these other kids who went to formal education, they don't have any of those blind spots. Could you imagine trying to, let's take it this way. I'll give you an analogy you can figure out for yourself. Let's say there's something that you've taught yourself and you're extremely knowledgeable about that thing. And you can have any level of conversation in that particular category. But now I come in your brain and I take two giant chunks of it. Maybe it's 30% of your knowledge of that. I just subtract it. And now you're no longer as comfortable as you were having those conversations because you're like, well, I don't know quite how that works. But I know that's real important to what I do. Well, college can, if it's a good school, make sure there are very few blind spots in your mind. So part of formal education could get you the information as quickly as possible because you're going to go balls to the wall, right? And you can go faster than your education dictates if you're really good and if you're really interested. Sadly, out of a four-year degree, you're getting a bunch of sort of what they call your AA stuff, your basic stuff that, although valuable and will round you off as a human being, again, psychology and sociology, they can be boring classes or they can be extremely exciting classes. Second time I took it, I loved it to death. But even the first time I took it, it was pretty cool. I think you're going to want to get it all and as much as you possibly can. And you're going to get to step on the shoulders of giants because these educators sometimes have been in the real world and they can sift through what you need to know and what you don't need to know. Now, if you're in a bad school, that's a problem. I would suggest that if you have no other option but a bad school, it's probably less than a 50% chance that school is going to be any value of you, but they're going to still charge you for the service. So you may hold off until you can get to a better school. Or you go in and get what you can that's good, and you leave as soon as that's over. One of my friends went into nursing, and she went to school for it, and they wanted her to take a computer class. And it wasn't just one computer class. It was like two or three different computer classes. And she's studying to be a nurse, not to be a computer software engineer or a hardware engineer. She called me up once in a panic because she was having a problem understanding a bunch of the material. And so I get in there, having spent my entire life in computers at all levels. And I will tell you that the class that they had her taking was the most ridiculous fucking class I've ever heard in my life. They were trying to get her to understand specifications of USB drives, of RAM sticks, almost down to the point of like pulling out an Ethernet cable and looking down at the pins and being able to tell you which part's the transmission pin and the receiving pin and the power pin and all that stuff. Unbelievably ridiculous curriculum for this nursing school. I mean, it would be like a MacGyver class or something. Ridiculous. You're going to triage a computer while you're triaging human beings. Hey, I don't know about you, but I'd rather have a nurse that knows how to fix me and knows jack all about computers, right? You know, everyone knows how to run software, right? Everyone knows how to write a letter to mommy and all that kind of stuff. But I want someone who's going to save my life. So you get bad schools. Now, some people are just geniuses, right? They just are. You run into them every once in a while. My stepfather wrote a book. He's got a PhD. He wrote a book on Kenneth Burke. I debate going back into my Kenneth Burke research and doing a whole episode on this guy because he was a very brilliant dude. I can't remember exactly what years this occurred, but it was early 20th century. And he was one of these guys that said, "Hey, Dad, instead of paying for my college and giving all the money to a university, why don't you give me all the money that you've saved for my university training, and I will formally teach myself." And he did it. And he became a very noted philosopher in this world. He's a big pioneer of scapegoating theory, among other things. But what this guy did was lay out his curriculum as hardcore as a four-year university. Read the books. I don't know if the guy ever tested out. He probably should have tested out after he's done. But the certifications to practice, I think, must have been a little bit lighter back in his days. But that always appealed to me because I heard about him probably in the mid-90s after I was, you know, highly successful in what I wanted to do. But what could you do with informal education? Teaching yourself. Now, I've got episodes on all this stuff back in season one, and I don't redo them because I've already done them. I wanted to get into music badly. And it was a personal endeavor for me. I never really contemplated doing it professionally. I mean, I would have my little fantasies again, but like I said, once I started seeing the lifestyles of people in the music business, I was like, yeah, I don't think I want to get into doing pounds of coke or heroin and, you know, living on a bus my entire life. I still have that little fantasy of like, let me just make a really cool album of music, whether I sing or not, doesn't matter. Just make a really cool album of music that might sell. Might be like club music or something, although I'm highly incompatible with kids these days for club music. Just put one track out there, you know, it's like that track, What Is Love? That guy was pretty old when he put that track out. What was the other guy? The other guy made that song, a lot of one-hit wonders from people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. That guy that did I'm Too Sexy, you know, that kind of track's not my kind of music, but you just smile and you go, man, that dude just made a shit ton of money right at the right time, made a little nest egg for himself. But what I ended up doing with my money from my formal business, which was software engineering, is I started accumulating instruments and started practicing my ass off. I mean, I would play my drums for, you know, 3 hours straight every night after work and just sit there and just pour sweat down my body. Practice my guitar over and over and over. And I, you know, I got good enough to be dangerous, I think. But what ended up happening was I started making my own little albums of music, right? It's sort of all embarrassing at this point because I use synths for everything and those sounds have all kind of expired in everyone's brains. But there was a point when I was working Electronic Arts and I was still a contractor at the time. And there was a golden point where this person had screwed up a bunch of music for Knockout Kings, the very first one in 1998. And a lot of guys in the department were listening to my music in their cubes. They just loved it because I was really getting a lot of club music and just taking my classical self-training with Bach and CPE Bach and a few others and just mixing them all together into these crazy compilations. I did a big version of John Carpenter's Halloween as well into a big techno song. So anyway, I got a lot of attention from that. I mean, we would cruise home at night from clubs listening to my stuff in the car. And I was like, wow, this is really weird. My friends want to listen to my shit in the car. This is like, it was a fucking trip. And then when I started singing and playing the guitar, like an acoustic guitar and singing some sort of bluesy, you know, I don't know, cowboy music or whatever it was, I had a whole set of other friends that loved that stuff. But anyway, this kid screwed it up. He screwed up his studio more than anything. I never even heard his music. But they came to me and said, look, you need to do this music. We only got $2,000. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And so I took the $2,000, I bought a JP8000 synthesizer because I owned everything else, but I needed some sounds off this keyboard to do what they were looking for. Sure enough, it was great. I used all my other stuff to create horns and started playing the drums and started playing my Fender guitar and doing a bunch of stuff. And I ended up creating my first video game music. It was cool. But it wasn't a miracle overnight, right? I had bought my first guitar probably 1988 or something like that, and just sat there listening to Prince and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix and just playing for hours and hours and hours. Just horrible follow-along, you know, attempts to figure out how to play the guitar. And it was without any formal training. So I had no idea what notes I was playing. I had no idea what key I was in. Yeah, I bought some books and, you know, I'd learned like a part of the riff, but I still had no idea what the fuck I was playing. But I could play. I could play on a piano. By the time I was probably 1989 or so, 2 or 3 years into the piano, I could play infinitely. And people just sit and listen. I used to play for my grandmother. She used to have a big piano in the house. I guess I could pretty much do that around 86, 87. But I just learned theory in my head, voice leading and you know, repetition makes a song, right? Pick four notes, play it four times in a row, switch up, and give yourself a B to your A, and it worked. So a lot of you have that capability built inside you, but a lot of you have that capability and you haven't even tried. I want to make sure that all of you take inventory of yourself right now in your life. And it doesn't matter how old you are, because half of this stuff, especially in those creative realms, is entertainment for you. And like Steve Jobs taught all of us, if you make a product that makes you happy, whatever it is, a piece of entertainment, you make some invention that helps you clean the kitchen counter a little bit better, there's a bunch of people that dig it and will pay you for it, right? What also ends up happening, and I know that all of you have probably experienced this, and if you haven't, you got a little present out there you need to give yourself. Once you get into this stuff and start succeeding, because you'll succeed at different levels, and I've said some of this 3 years ago, I want to say it again. But once you start seeing yourself succeed, that's going to do a lot for your whole life, because you're going to realize you've got recessive genes, you have a certain wiring in your brain, that whatever you want to do, you may have thought about it so much. It's like the basketball players that were taught that they visualize making all the free throws. They do a lot better at doing their free throws. There's boxers out there that envision themselves winning, and they just win, win, win. It's amazing, right? Because if you have Don King as a manager, you'll win all the time. But it increases your self-confidence, and it also opens up a bunch of other doors. But let me give you a little lesson from your humble narrator. One of the things you don't want to do is celebrate too hard with a tiny success. Get excited and save that energy up. Don't run around telling everybody you did it. Don't run around giving yourself pats on the back too much, because you'll take the steam out of the experience and you won't go any further. When I became an artist, or realized I was an artist at one point, you know, I was always an entrepreneur, so I was, again, walking door to door selling my art as a 7-year-old. It was kind of funny. But when I started, you know, oil painting, I just pick a really hard thing. I picked Purple Rain, the cover. And I never painted anything. I actually painted a lot of Kiss albums when I was 9 years old. But when I finally got to my teens, I just said, I'm going to do this. I've never done it before, but I'm going to do this. And I just started painting and painting, and I ended up painting over him several times, but I got him and that album cover really well. And then I moved around a little bit and didn't get to finish the whole outside, but I didn't give a shit because Prince looked good in the middle, and that was the guy I was going to, that's the only one I really cared about, right? But I started selling paintings in high school. Guys would bring me pictures of Marilyn Monroe, lips with cherries in it, and, you know, with all kinds of weird shit falling out of their mouths. And I used to paint that and just sell the painting, just one after the other. In fact, I moved out of my dad's house at 16, and I ended up having this Marilyn Monroe painting. It was done. And the guy was like, Jesus, I need to get my painting. I'm like, yeah, it's over at my grandma's. Come on over. And I completely forgot that when I moved to California, you know, I was, again, very successful. I had my own 2-bedroom apartment, and I was like 18 years old. But I still always wanted a little bit more money. And I remember there was a woman at work that, for whatever reason, just had amazing faith in me. And she just goes, well, I need you to do a painting for me. And she brought me some samples of her bedding. And she goes, if you could just take these colors and do something with it, with the patterns and stuff on it. So I created one of those three different painting things. It was probably 88, 89. And I created her a little thing. She hung on the wall. She hung it in certain places, and it all went together beautifully. And then she somehow figured out I had this other giant painting I was doing of the world. It was a very surrealistic picture, two eyes looking down on the world. And it was all about how technology, you know, might be the end of us sort of painting. It was huge, 30 by 40, and she bought it. And then when her and her husband got a divorce, they were fighting over this painting. It was just funny, right? And she had me do a portrait of her family, which I did it, but I really wish I could redo it now. Now, in the mid-90s as well, I'm just going to give you some examples because I need you to understand how successful you can be in an informal way. Now, I'm not telling this to make you think I'm cool or anything like that. I mean, you literally... I don't know how blown away anyone would be seeing my old stuff or listening to the old stuff, but I got this reputation for writing music. And one of my friends goes, hey, my sister's getting married to this dude and they're having a wedding and they want wedding music to go with the slideshow. They got a bunch of fast stuff and then they have a bunch of like heart-wrenching stuff. And so I wrote two pieces and I remember showing up at this wedding and I just brought my tracks with me. I can't remember how I was playing them. And it ended up being the track, and everybody cried, and everybody yelled and screamed. They had a good time, and it was amazing. I got a lot of people coming up to me like, well, you did that music? I was like, yeah. Yeah, I got a couple keyboards at home, and I'm just sequencing within the keyboards. It was really fun. That led to my first studio. But, sorry, I didn't finish my point. So when I got really good at painting and drawing and all this kind of stuff, and it was just easy to blow people's minds. Just paint, boom, everyone was like, wow. I just sit down and do a painting of Prince, you know, and then I've done so many of him, it's crazy. I've sold a bunch of them. I just have I think two left now. I sort of got bored with it, and it was like nothing was challenging, but the problem was I hadn't studied art well enough. Too. My mother was trying. She was really trying to get me to understand surrealism and cubism and impressionism and all that kind of stuff. And I just was like, yeah, that looks like shit. You know, it didn't even look good, you know, because it was all impressionistic. And I was like, what an idiot I was, right? I never discovered Salvador Dali before I quit. You know, I can still paint. I still create all kinds of paint projects. I create physical projects now where I build something and I paint it and I give it to somebody and they just literally have a one of a kind. I have shit all over the place, man, that people don't know I painted. I paint restaurant walls, you know, like I found my buddy's restaurant. It was a big rock and roll crepe restaurant and he had one wall that was all black with a barbed wire fence on it and people would walk in and look around. They got the family in the car and they want to eat the food. The menu looks great. And they just look inside and they'd walk off. And then remember the founder goes, God, I fucking hate that. And I said, well, dude, it's not exactly looks like a family restaurant. I said, let me do this, man. I got a game company right now. My skills are really hot. I've never painted that particular thing, but I know I can get this done. And sure enough, he didn't want to do it until I took a picture of his restaurant, took it home, masked out the wall, and then put the artwork in that I wanted in his restaurant and then did all the shading so it looked absolutely photoreal. And then I texted it to them and literally his wife and came back in 2 minutes and goes, we're going to do it. Do it. I don't care what he says. This looks fantastic. To this day, it's got my two Flying V guitars on the wall and everyone who comes in there sits underneath the guitars because that's the guitars, right? So you can do this kind of stuff. You don't need permission from anybody, right? I don't want to hear people sort of Debbie Downing themselves because they don't have formal educations, because they think they've passed their 20s. One, they don't think they have any time to go back to school, and they quite frankly may not have the time. If anyone, the thing is, if you want a ball, right, which means you want to have money, you want to control your destiny, you are going to have to get organized in your life. I have a whole episode on time management in episode one. It's not what you think, okay? It's not like, okay, this is how you manage time in a project. It's about crafting your life such that every single spare second you have goes towards your love, goes towards what you like. You know, some people sit in the bathroom for a long time. All right, well, you know what? I wrote at least two songs with a little synthesizer on my lap trying to figure out who number two works for, you know? I drew my high school book cover on the toilet, okay? Which for my 30th, I put it back in the computer and finally finished it the way they said it was going to be printed. There's a whole group out there, a whole society out there called the Make Group. And they do everything. Old ladies making quilts, to guys building robots, to people doing absolutely everything, making kites, anything that exists in the world. It's in the Make organization. Go look it up. And even if you don't join the organization, I don't know if you join it with money or anything. I haven't paid any money for it. But recently I got back into electronics because of my project with LED virtual realities theaters. I wanted to understand more of the subatomics of the controller boards and all this other stuff. And you know what I figured out? It's all easy. And that's the other thing you have to understand. Once you understand an art of some sort, be it surgery, be it psychology or engineering, artwork, anything, eventually you get to this beautiful sweet spot where it's easy. When I teach students software, the way I do it is I don't really go through and go, this is how you do this, right? I just had a friend of mine, she was struggling with Photoshop yesterday, and she was like, man, I hate cropping this crap out. I told her three tricks, and she was flying. She was like, oh my God, I can't believe how much time I'm saving. Like, see, a little bit of passing of the torch, and people live a better life, right? For you people trying to learn software, there's an interesting trick, and it actually applies to life as well, but then numbers might be a little bit skewed. And software is very interesting. Let's say you were to launch Photoshop for the very first time. Well, that product is horribly unintuitive. It is. Just like AutoCAD. AutoCAD's even worse. And AutoCAD's 10 times worse than Photoshop for being intuitive. And it's because programmers aren't right brain, they're left brain, so they do things really systematic. It's getting better. But what happens with Photoshop? What I tell my students is I say, look, every product like this, Maya, Blender 3D, all these products, you will be mastered by it for a number of years, and then you will start to become its master. You will start to understand that there are hundreds and hundreds of filters and tools and layers and masks and all kinds of cool things you can do. And once you understand how each one of these things works individually, you can start putting them on top of each other and creating things that no one's ever seen before. And it starts to get you money. It starts to get you jobs and security. And so if you want to enjoy your weekends doing something different, why not do something during the week that you love? Now, I've talked a lot about that thing of feeling lost in your job. I have an episode directly on it, but I mentioned it several times in different episodes. There's probably nothing more acidic to your stomach than to feel like you're in a bad loop, a bad cycle. But a little trick in life goes something like this. Let's say you're in a bad loop. You don't like your job very much. You don't know what you're going to do with your life. You don't like the one that you're in. You don't mind everything about your life. I mean, you don't hate everything. You might like your house, you might like your neighborhood. But you're like, geez, I really don't like where I go to work every day. You might have kids, a lot of demanding things on your life. Well, just a little snippet of the time management thing is that one of the greatest things in the world is a light at the end of the tunnel. Some people might call it hope. I think hope is sort of a fantasy emotion that is basically a lie. But you can get this feeling of like, you know what? I'm going to go to that crappy job. But as soon as I get home, I'm going to my new job. And it's you studying things. There's always a Saturday and a Sunday. And usually in America, you have to do 2 days off every 5 days on. All right. At the end of every day, there's usually time, depending on when you start. There might be time. Depending how long your lunch is, there's time. You go to the bathroom, there's time. There's books, there's videos. There's just trial software half the time when you want to download it. If you want to learn an instrument, well, you need to go get yourself one. And don't worry about getting the very best of everything, man. I learned how to play the guitar on a $300 acoustic. I still own it. It's been with me forever. First time I ever wrote a song on, I was lying on my back in bed in the middle of the summer. It was dark. I couldn't see anything, but I was just sitting there playing. I found a couple chords. I had no idea what note I'm playing. I don't know what key I'm in. And I just started singing lyrics, and that turned into a song, which led to a bunch of other songs. So again, you don't have to have all that formal knowledge to kick ass and take names, right? We are human beings. And because we're human beings, we have a guarantee. We're the dominant species on this planet, guys. You think we got here because we don't have gifts lying in the belly of every single one of us? If you believe in a soul and the stream of consciousness that is the universe and all the knowledge of the universe, then perhaps the only thing you haven't done is run that little search algorithm in your heart and go, well, geez, I really want to do this. I mean, I really want to do this. I have the passion for this. Once you have the passion, you ever heard that phrase, where there's a will, there's a way? There you go. That is the kernel that is built into every human being. Why do we like freedom? Because it's a passion of ours. What's freedom give you? The opportunity to go get your dreams. If you're a left-brain person, you're like, well, geez, I kind of have that feeling, but it's really a fleeting feeling, but I definitely don't like my job. You need to flip the script in your brain and realize those things that you admire, those things that you use to entertain yourself, maybe you're the one that should be on stage every once in a while. And that doesn't mean entertainment specifically. A lot of people do go back to school and they get degrees and things and they do amazing things with their life. I think those are very few people that have the time and the resources to do such a thing. Or they have the energy past 40 to go and get homework, right? I tell my students, I think I mentioned this in one episode, but I want to mention it to you guys now. Now I'm going to go to universities and I have a fair amount of time to lecture, 2 or 3 hours plus. I especially throw this in, but I'm even starting to throw it in the hour and a half sessions I do every once in a while. But I remind them, I say, look, you are here on this planet because your family survived all previous history of this planet. Once our species was either dropped off, invented by God, or both, we dominated. We dominated the point we have articulated language. We control the whole planet. I mean, Christ, we control the weather now, right? All right. That means that you're amazing. There haven't been enough generations of social justice warriors to completely weed out the amazing genetics that are in these kids. For all those kids that are completely lost, completely misguided, worshiping their demise, all of them have the gifts to take that all over and fall in love with a good day's work, getting a trade skill. Well, if you're not deluded like they are, well, then you're already on top. You're just inches away from whatever destiny you want. If you can get formal education, that's great. But you shouldn't feel bad if you don't have it. A lot of us don't have it. A lot of the heroes that you worship never had it. Now, Steve Jobs eventually got a degree in, I think, his 50s. And that's when he did his famous speech. It was the late 40s, early 50s. He did his famous speech in Stanford. But I tell you what, that famous speech is posted every once in a while on social media, right? And they say, look, listen to this speech by Steve Jobs. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about that speech that everybody misses. Everybody misses this element of the speech. All of the brilliance in that speech came from real life. The School of Hard Knocks, not from Stanford. He already had all that knowledge. He could have made that speech 20 years before he did. It wasn't the formal education that gave it to him. The other thing about formal education that you have to be wary of, and this is for those of you with children, grandchildren, access to kids that you care about, what would be, and again, there's different colleges, okay, so I'm going to make a distinction here, but I'm also going to tell you what my friend Sid Mead told me about his education. If you're told everything that you need to do, constantly, read this book, memorize a bunch of crap, come back, give the test, genuinely try to understand it for the rest of your life, and of course, some of that's going to be involuntary, you just can't forget it. It's going to be valuable knowledge, of course. You may not be stimulating the part of you that will give you ultimate satisfaction at the end of your life. By the end of your life, I should say. It institutionalizes left brain learning and does very, very little for the right brain, depending on what school you go to and what course you're taking. Now, again, if you go to a film school or an art school, they may force you to write a screenplay, direct something, see your mistakes, correct it, get creative with it. You may do a great job technically executing your first short film, but the teacher gives you a D because it wasn't very creative. It wasn't entertaining. You're like, Jesus, man, I did everything. When I go to psychology class, I just read the book, take the test, and I get an A. Here, I'm doing everything I'm told to do, but I'm not getting the A, and I don't really feel that good about it anyway. Maybe you are feeling good about finishing something difficult, and that's good too. My good friend Sid Mead went to Art Center. And what was interesting about it was I had known him for probably at least 15 years before he told me this. And he said, Art Center didn't teach me how to draw. I already knew how to draw. And of course, I already knew this. I'd already seen all of his childhood renderings and his teenage renderings before he got to Art Center. He said, what Art Center told me how to do was to turn my art into a business. And more specifically, he said that the biggest lesson he learned from Art Center was the following. And this is something you need to do with whatever career you're doing that is especially creative, where you're having to create something new every week, maybe every day, maybe every month, depending on your cycle of whatever it takes you to do something. But what he said was, they will teach you that when you start on Monday, you are executing what you planned the previous week. And so what you're thinking about while you're executing today's Monday through Friday event, because he was had a week cycle in the college, was you were thinking about what you were going to do the next week. So you're not really focused on the execution. The execution is just robotic. I am painting, I am painting, I am painting. I remember what I had designed the previous week. Well, that applies to a lot of things in life. Think about all these musicians that tour that one album they've got. What do you think they're really thinking about? Well, the second they're... Well, you can think about all kinds of stuff while you're singing a song. It's amazing. You're singing a lyric passionately and you're thinking, you know, did I leave the oven on at home? You can do those kind of things. What they're thinking of, if they're going to exist in this industry of music or whatever they're doing, is the next album of music they need to write, because that's the demand of the industry on you. Which brings up another distinction you need to understand. When I got into the video game business as a very young person, I saw a phenomenon that I now call the comic book artist phenomenon. And it's just my personal take on this because I saw this several times in the comic book industry. I was never in the comic book industry. I had several guys around me that were in it, that were trying to get into it. And there was this little distinction. I've said this once before in an episode in season one. They could draw amazing stuff. Problem, they couldn't draw it fast enough. Why? Because a lot of these guys would do mimic art. So they would look at another comic book and draw it. They were mimicking someone else's moves. Now that's important too, to learn techniques and learn how people do things. But the guys that rise to the top and the girls that rise to the top in these industries of art are people that can think for themselves. Well, there's a huge thing that starts to happen when you can think for yourself. What I learned by watching two friends, one totally succeed, and he created his own comic book series, which turned into a bunch of other stuff, and he's worked professionally in comic books and video games forever, is that you have to create a page a day of comic book art. You know, it goes in three layers now, right? As there's the pencil, the ink, and the coloring. It's all done digitally now for a lot of folks. But these kids that were just sort of mimicking what they loved lacked the proficiency to do it professionally. Well, every, you know, what is it? A goal without a deadline is a dream. That's what their whole life had turned into. Now, these kids were young enough to get their act together and soup up. But what would happen to some of these kids? And one of them was the exhibition case. It's a dude I barely knew. I don't think I ever really sat in the room with the dude, but I went to one of my buddy's houses, and this artwork was everywhere, and they said, this is our buddy, and he's trying to get into this comic book company. I think it was DC at the time. I looked at the art, and it was pretty good. It wasn't mind-blowing, because it was everyone else's stuff copied down, and he could create his own stuff, but his proportions on the bodies were really weird. He got in, and they tested him, and he could not draw remotely a page a day. Plus, they were looking for him to invent new ways that the body would be positioned because, you know, superhero comic books at the time, this was the late 80s, you know, were very traditional Stan Lee kind of stuff. But you had a ton of reference. But the kid could put in his brain, if I'm going to draw this kind of stuff, I need to buy every single comic book that is exactly like this and study it and then come up with my own crazy positions of the camera and moves. Maybe I got to buy one of those little dolls where I kind of turn it around and look at it. Maybe I got to take pictures of myself to figure out what I do, get in front of the mirror. He wasn't doing that. And so ultimately, I do not believe this individual ever got into the comic book industry. When someone hired me to do 9 tracks for Knockout Kings, I had to be able to go, yes, sir, I will get that done. When do you need it? Oh, I had 2 weeks to write 9 tracks. I ended up doing 8 out of the 9 because they wanted a mariachi band. I said, dude, you don't want me to create a synth mariachi band. I said, there's 100 of them in town. Just hire one to stand in front of a mic and play whatever you want. But I did get the other 8 done. Later, when my friends broke out of Electronic Arts and created their own video games, guess what happened? They came back to me for more music. Except now it had another constraint on it because they were getting into the Game Boy Advance right when it came out. What was the limitation of a Game Boy Advance? You couldn't play 2 notes at the same time. But they wanted all this elaborate music. And I did music for the NFL Madden, EA Madden port. I did music for couple other games, but then I started doing sound effects too. But I had to play drums that were obviously playing a ton of things at the same time. Boom, ba, bum, ba, boom, ba, bum, ba, boom, ba, bum. Well, I couldn't do that. So it was everything had to be 1 note at a time, but it had to sound like this other stuff. Well, when you want to overlay that with a synth, I had a problem. So I had to figure out times, literally in the signature of my music, to interlace a synth note with a beat. So it still had a beat. It was tough. But all my previous experience in quantifying all my notes and getting in there, moving notes around to make things perfect, made that possible. Luckily, MasterTrax Pro on the Mac was awesome. And then they let it go. When I worked for LL Cool J to make his Boom Dizzle producer studio, which he called something different when it finally came out on the Sony Vios, all that experience came back. You know, we had to essentially create a little mini Pro Tools, and then we had to create all this, you know, chat room, a video chat, text chat. We had to create all kinds of methodology to record it local to the hard drive, upload it to the server. We had to create a special plugin for the headset and the microphone so that the milliseconds between it hitting the port and coming back to your ear was 12 milliseconds or less. All those things made it possible for me to deliver the first prototype of that from the moment I shook the dude's hand in a Four Seasons in LA to the moment he recorded and mixed a song with his producer in Buffalo, New York, with 45 days. And the dude looked at me after he recorded this and he just said, I've been told for 15 months that this was impossible and you guys did it in 45 days. That's how you do it. You get inside your passions, you intimately understand them, you challenge yourself. You know, with it, one of the best analogies I can give you is the old computer analogy I gave you earlier. I got this computer. It had a quad fold-out card, which top and bottom said 2 different sections on each side, and you flipped it over and had the easier commands on the front and the harder commands on the back. And I sat there and said, well, I got to design a product where I'm going to use every single command. And I did. Took 2 or 3 different programs to do it. When it came to sound, they had this whole sound library. I had this fantasy of owning my own keyboard. But I was like 14, 15 years old. And, you know, like I would mow forever just to pay for my lawnmower, you know. I wrote a keyboard inside this computer. And so I actually started trying to put the notes on the keys. That was really not a good idea. But then I got to the point I could just enter in all the sheet music and the rests and all that kind of stuff. And I'd hear a song back. And I was like, well, geez, this is a horrible product. I couldn't sell this one. But I learned how to read and write music because of that. Get yourself a project. Test yourself. Remember, you're a human being, and we're the most amazing thing that we have access to on this planet. As screwed up and susceptible as we are to lies, because we're not built to process them, this is a good, fun area where you can just change your life. And don't be worried if you get in and you need a little formal education. Maybe your idea of formal education is going on an online course. I've got buddies of mine, like I said, my old co-host of MKUltra Radio, he was playing with Poser and Bryce 3D. Bryce created canyons, Poser created humans. So he would export humans, put them in Bryce, and render these gorgeous worlds and ship them out. I named one of my companies after one of his drawings. I still have it to this day. But he went off and took a weekend course on how to do 3D in a product called Lightwave. Well, 25 years later and two Emmys later, he just finished working on Top Gun. What was he doing when he enrolled in this class? He was working in a tech support department, taking, you know, calls on how to hook your computer up to the internet, how to get email to work. What did he do before that? He was climbing telephone poles, installing cable. What did he do before that? He has a legendary band called Dr. No, which he toured for approximately 10 years in the 80s. So he went through a bunch of different careers. Talk about a dude who's bald his whole life. And I don't mean the crying kind. He's in control of his destiny. And I don't think he'll ever allow himself to be out of control of his destiny. But he's born from the same, you know, pool of primordial make-believe ooze that says there's no job underneath him as well. A lot of us are like that. Hope you're like that. Well, the most fun I've ever had was helping my buddy run his pizzeria, an Italian restaurant. I got to make pizza. I got to make Italian dishes. I got to talk to customers. I got to bus tables. What was I doing during the day? Well, I was across the street making video games for HBO. Okay, so it's fun. Get out there and do everything that you thought you would never do. Don't worry about what anyone else thinks. On your deathbed, are you going to give a shit what anyone else thinks of your life but you and your family? If you've been a good person, you've helped people, and you've lived the life that you wanted to live, who cares if you had a formal education? Again, if you can get one and it's based on a trade skill, go for it. Tear up the world in that trade skill. And you'll learn, like all of us, that as soon as you get out of college, that's when you started understanding what it is you wanted to do with your life. But it's good to have a little fallback if you can. So for those of you who are young, start playing now. So when you get to college, you got your stuff, you got your major in your heart. If you don't, maybe you hold off. Maybe you go to a junior college until you figure out what you love. Go do a bunch of stuff that you've been dying to do. Be realistic, right? If there's a new industry out there and there's a huge demand for it, but it's already saturated with people, maybe look around for another one. When I was a kid in the 80s, they said, you know, software engineering is the highest thing in demand and it's going to go forever. Well, that I lucked out, because not only did we have the computerization of analog data, right, which is what Ross Perot did back in the day with his systems, EDS or whatever it was. Probably have that wrong. But the internet exploded with HTTP protocol. Boom. Whole nother juice in my veins. Another adrenaline shot of opportunity, money, and all kinds of stuff. You know, I sat, I wanted to give you guys this analogy before, or this case study in my own life before this episode's over. And this, again, it's not to toot my own horn. This is just to show you how powerful it is, how powerful passion is in juxtaposed to this formalized Prussian approach to your life, right? This drive the education down into your soul thing. I was working in Electronic Arts and we were building EA.com. It was a $310 million project. And I never thought in a million years that a year earlier, when I took over a 6-man team of coders, that I would be one of the lead architects on this project. But I was sitting at home every day leading up to this job. Now, this is how I transitioned. I was doing database coding during the day for big giant corporations, you know, big government projects and all kinds of stuff, like helping people do it and developing the core technologies that they would use to then put into their systems. But I was looking at this internet thing and I was like, man, I really want to understand this. This is amazing. So I'd work an 8-hour day, come home, and work a 4-hour day at home. and I was on the edge. I mean, I was into all kinds of animation in web browsers before there was any Flash or any of that kind of stuff, you know, using timer loops and all this other crazy JavaScript DOM stuff before React and all that stuff came out. And so because I was used to making a ton of money, and I wanted to keep making tons of money. And so I transitioned out of this database job, which was very unique, and I was the top of the game in that realm, and I jumped over into the internet. And because I had an art background and a programming background, when I showed my portfolio off, not only was it gorgeous, it worked well. It was like mind-blowing. People were like, Jesus, well, yeah, definitely hire this kid. I transitioned with a $5,000 difference in my paycheck. But I was making, you know, $80,000 a year at 27 years old in the 90s, right? I just talked to some guy the other day. He said if he had a PhD and he gets into the school system here locally, he could make $80,000 in 10 years. This is 2019, for Christ's sake, right? This is the power of living in your dreams. But so I worked for this company for about a year and a half. Again, I'm contracting on the side, video game music and a bunch of other stuff on the side, right? I have my own software company on the side, still marketing products back to that database industry. When I got the job opportunity to manage these coders, I had to go in, and these are a bunch of young guys that work at a video game company, so they're used to the coolest planet on, you know, or coolest place on planet Earth. And so I went in and I had to sell myself culturally. I said, look, man, I'm like you, man. I like all the cool stuff and I do all this other stuff. And I go, oh, man, that's cool. You're going to be our boss? And I said, well, if you tell your boss that you like me, yeah, it was a 9-hour interview. I met everybody there. 2 weeks went by and I never got a call back. And I was like, Jesus Christ, man, I thought I nailed this. And so I finally called the guy, got him on a cell phone. He wanted to take me down another $5,000. Now I'm making 75 grand, but I'm doing more. So I went in, I took it, because I knew if I got in, everything could happen. Sure enough, everything happened. I got in there and I found out they were working out this deal with AOL to start this big giant online gaming platform. And so I just couldn't do anything but manage my coders. Well, then two people resigned internally. My team grew to 24. Now I'm managing the artists, the coders, and the producers. Well, I had done all those jobs at those previous jobs. Found out they had no process. And so I wrote all these documents on how to do it and use the best of breed from everyone else. If you want to manage people, like I said, ask them what their best day was. Document it. Make sure it takes care of all the, you know, crosses all the T's and dots all the I's, and then present it back to them and say, would you mind doing it like this every single time? Instant buy-in, because they're like, hell yeah, that's the best day we've ever had. You want us to do that all the time? Yes, I do. We had a guy that was going to get fired. He ended up being our top employee because he loved the process. Well, then this thing finally gets greenlit. We hired this big giant consulting firm called Anderson Consulting. They were charging us $2.5 million a month, all right? But they weren't getting shit done. They put all these gorgeous women in. One of their tactics was to rotate all their employees through coding, even if they weren't coders. They had all these gorgeous women in there. What would they do? They would literally walk up to the smartest nerd. This was a tactic. It was amazing. And they said, oh, you know, I can't figure out my code. You want to sit next to a hot girl and do my job and your job at the same time? And these kids were like, sure, baby. And they sat there and did these other people's jobs. Unbelievable. Finally, we got a new CTO in, and he was awesome. He was an ass kicker. First, I had to teach him the internet. I had to teach the CEO internet. I had to teach head of games internet. I had all these like secret educational sessions so no one would seem stupid in these conversations. Okay. Then it came time to finally start making this big, gigantic $310 million platform. 87 went out the door to AOL, and the rest was spent on production. They were having this huge meeting to figure out how to do this product, how to structure two different back-end languages talking at the same time. One of my friends, his name's Mick, was another gigantic genius, and the two of us got this damn thing done. He did something utterly brilliant. He decompiled some Apache software and created a little router that handled the dual platforms together. For any of you who understand that, it was ingenious. He totally like ripped apart a pre-compiled piece of code, ripped it apart, rewrote it, and put it back together, and he became a star real quick. Over the next year, I had three $15,000 raises. I already had tons of stock options. I had a huge-ass bonus at the end of the year. I'm talking about deep five-digit bonus. But I walked into this room and I'm looking at two partners from Anderson Consulting, plus all their employees, plus all of our brilliant people, and they couldn't figure this thing out. And I'm listening. Now, no one told me to do what I did next. I'm 29 years old. I just said, guys, enough of this. I went up to the whiteboard, got my marker, and I said, it's real simple. This is how we're going to do it. I laid the entire architecture for this thing out on the board. I said, does anyone have any questions? No, that looks good. Oh my God, that's it. Dropped the mic, walked out of the room. One of my employees ran up behind me. He's like, holy shit, that was awesome. $2.5 million a month, formal educated people couldn't figure out how to fucking architect this thing. Unbelievable. Now, my friend Mick, I believe he's got at least a bachelor's, and he may even have more nowadays, but he wouldn't have had that. He's a genius anyway. So two kids go in there and just own this thing. Unbelievable, right? I went first, he went second at a different meeting. It gave me star power within the company. I was super young, super knowledgeable. If you need to know anything, well, he's the one that taught us secretly in the back room. You can do all of this stuff and whatever it is you love. Just get into it and love it. And you'll be so astonished what people will pay you to do, because to you, it's a cinch. And to you, it won't even be work. It'll be your love. It'll be your passion, man. Don't sell yourself short. And if you're in the middle of this right now and you're just getting a little bit of inertia, a little bit of resistance that maybe sort of taking the steam out of your sail, well, hopefully this episode will re-energize you. Go back to season one, look through all the titles. Some of that stuff is not, I think, viewable in Europe because of some of the 15-second soundtracks I used at the beginning. I think I've made the executive decision now, since I have all those backed up, I am going to look at all the ones that are limited because of the music, and I'm going to create probably a brand new season one intro and fix all those songs, get them all out of there, and then re-upload the whole season one for you guys so you guys can see the ones that you perhaps can't see if you're outside the United States of America. I hope this was valuable to you. I have helped hundreds and hundreds of people get these dreams with less information than I've given you guys on this show. You don't have to sign up to anything. There's no subscription to this kind of stuff. You can thank me on Patreon if you make a ton of money. I want you to be happy. I want to experience what you create. There's so many listeners out there who have these little businesses on the side, and it's just fantastic to see what they do. And, most of it's all way before they ever heard a lick of my pontification. What is it? Rob Schneider says, you can do it. That's you, man. You can do it completely. And, it's interesting because some people will be like, I have medical issues, right? I don't feel good most of the day. They got a medical condition. All right. Let me give you a little secret. You start doing something that you love. And if you can just work your hands, if you can just talk, if you can communicate to another human being, they can do it for you if you're completely paralyzed from the neck down. Well, this is what I want to do. I got an idea. And someone's going to be right there next to you going, dude, I don't have a passion yet. You do. If I can help you get your passion, then maybe I'll find my own passion, but maybe I'll like what you're doing and they'll put it all together for you, right? So you can always pull this thing off. If you have breath in your body, you can pull this off. And believe it or not, you will start inspiring people around you to do the same passion-seeking thing. Share all of your tricks. Share all of your sources. If you've had that moment where, you had to go back and get a formal education and you got your dream, well, share that idea. Share that whole experience. But make sure you don't just share just the successes. Everybody can fall into successes. That's not a big deal. Share all the moments in your life where you thought you were going to give up, or you thought this was the end of the road, but you kept going and then kapow, it all happened. Make sure you share everything. There's one thing I used to teach back in the 90s. I used to have this website that taught this. It's just one little lesson that everybody needs to understand. When you start doing something, you commit to a project and you start working at it every day. It sometimes, often, okay, will get really difficult the difficulty ramp starts ramping up and ramping up like crazy. And you start to think, oh my God, I have bitten off way too much. Maybe God is trying to give me a sign that I shouldn't be doing this. But do you know what the truth is? Everyone who succeeds has been through that apparatus, and what they know is one little special secret that I want to make sure all of you know. It's going to ramp up, ramp up, ramp up, and then it's going to peak. It won't get any harder because it's as hard as it could get. And you're going to go through that fleeting emotion as it starts to level off and plateau. And then guess what happens? There's this epiphany, this moment. Any of you have played video games and try to beat a boss in a video game, you know this firsthand. You find out the thing you're supposed to do. You find out the thing that breaks you through the barrier. And all of a sudden, that difficulty skyrockets down. Everything clicks in your head. You start to see this thing you were trying to build, which had no form and function, starts to take shape. Maybe it's not exactly the way you thought it would be. Sid Mead tells me to this day that when he paints, it's still not exactly the way he sees it in his head. And the way he sees it in his head is better than what he paints. And I'm like, really? I'd love to be in your brain for 1 second, dude. But it drops down and then kapow, you were shot out of the barrel faster than you could possibly imagine as what we call the success wave. And even if, again, the very first time you do it, it's sort of a Frankenstein thing, guarantee the second time you do it, it's better. So know that the people that are super successful know this happens. I guarantee you every single director who's ever made a film, every single screenwriter who's ever wrote a screenplay, they get to that point where you're like, I think this is shit. What have I done? I'm going to get fired. But they keep going and keep going. And they feel that drop. They feel the success. They get the awards, get the accolades. They get famous. And then the next time they make a movie, or do whatever they do, they feel that difficulty and they feel it level off. It's like if you eat a hot pepper. You eat that hot pepper and it ramps, it ramps, it ramps, and ramps. You think you're going to die. And then it finally levels off. And then your adrenaline floods into your system. You feel like you're floating on air. And all of a sudden, it starts to drop off. They seek that wave. They seek that pattern. So I don't want you guys giving up as well, just because it gets really hard. I have family members that have given up just because it got hard. They think there's a sign that they're going to fail, and they want to avoid failure at all costs, even if they have to judge themselves for the failure. And then, of course, there's the old Edison analogy. He created 10,000 light bulbs before one worked. All right. Pick your poison. It all leads to success. And sure, it's being birthed into your success. It's going through that eye of the needle. But I tell you what, there's nothing you'll be more proud of than that journey through the eye of the needle, especially when you get on the other side. It's an obligatory moment in time, meaning it is something that is guaranteed to occur. And I'll leave you one final note before I sign off. For those of you who want to be artists, I have a little analogy I tell kids, but I tell it to adults, and it's actually more impact on the adults. I say, look, if you have the power to illustrate the alphabet, whether you have to draw it slow or quickly, you can make A through Z in your language, then you have the mechanical skills to draw anything in the world. Because within the geometry of all the letters in the alphabet, you have the aptitude to remember the symbol and draw it if you had to. You look at a picture, and every single line in my face is a letter in the alphabet. Maybe it's only a little twist of a single letter. You're like, oh, that's that part of the R. Yeah, R. I'm only going to draw that little bump on the top of the R. Well, there's the whatever, the pimple on the guy's face, whatever. Understand that we have all this ability just sitting there, and we know we have the ability. You just need to play with your mind to the point you can actually get it to be fruitful for you. All right, that's a long-ass episode, but hopefully that is valuable to you. I love these kind of things because now we're getting out of the darkness, getting back into where I really want Deep Thoughts to be. Speaking of, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's where you get the audio and the video in case you want to switch feeds. You want to have it in the car. You're going to finish half of it at home on your phone. And then if you don't have that what is it, the red subscription on YouTube, you can't download it to your phone. The podcast is around the front. As I'm always saying in episodes, we have a great locked Facebook group. It's locked so we can keep out a lot of the spammers. We're getting a lot of people joining that I'm suspect of whether or not they're actually real people. What I'll probably end up doing is cleaning out a ton of members that don't post or contribute. May just be little bots sitting in there. None of them ever try to post anything bad, so we don't have that problem. There's a Twitter account, in case those of you who hate all the other platforms and you like Twitter, but you want to have a little bit of a notification. But if you have a podcast reader, it'll let you know new episodes come down if you set it up right. And we have the Patreon page, so any of you who feel that you can contribute to the show financially in any way, shape, or form, you get previews of all the episodes 8 to 24 hours beforehand, sometimes days if I'm wanting to do a double release on the weekend. I just did a double release. This is a Thursday. So at the time of this recording, episode 348 just went out the door tonight. It's been very successful. As just a kind of a footnote, you know, I do want to keep the show out of dark subjects, and lately I've had to deal with a bunch of things that I think are very important. I don't want the show to produce acid in your body, if you know what I mean. I want it to be inspiring at times. So these are these episodes that I absolutely love to do, because again, if I could just give you my brain, if I could just upload a bunch of things in a kind of a brainstorm machine, and you guys could play it back. If you haven't seen the movie Brainstorm, you are truly denying yourself an amazing movie. But if I could give you everything I had, like a Matrix plug-in, I would definitely post that somewhere so you could get it and get your dreams. This is the best way I know how to do it. Plus, if I have a really good show, then you get to see the best performance that I've ever had on this particular subject matter. So, go take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.